This is Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. Steve Poftek took over leadership of the MBTA in January, and it's been an interesting first year. He joins us now to talk about all things T and take your calls. Steve, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thanks so much for having me.
And you, call us. We want to hear from you. Steve's ready to talk to you. What do you want to ask Steve Poftek, general manager of the T? Questions about your commute, status on those Orange Line trains. What else do you want to know? Call us, 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK, or tweet us at Radio Boston. I think you took the Green Line here today.
Yes, I did. So I took the Green Line in.
How was your commute?
My commute was great.
Excellent.
Got me here quickly and promptly.
Which train did you take?
I took the B Line.
The B Line.
Obviously.
All right. Now, you've been in the job about 9 months.
That's right.
How's it going?
You know, I love this job, and it's a privilege to have it. The people are fantastic. I couldn't be more proud of our workforce. I know we have a lot of work to do. I know we have public trust to rebuild. But I think the team is up to the task. We have the resources to do it, and I look forward to delivering on it.
1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK to join our conversation with MBTA General Manager Steve Poftek. It has been a challenging year. This was a big first year for a T general manager. Delays on the Red Line while you work to repair damage of a train derailment, some fires on the tracks and trains, which got captured. They go viral on social media. Has it been a harder job than you thought it would be coming in?
I mean, obviously, you know, we never could have predicted particularly the Red Line derailment on June 11th was obviously very difficult to recover from. I actually had probably unique experience of being the interim general manager for 10 weeks in 2017. So I very much knew what I was getting into in terms of the tempo, pace, and the possible events that could happen.
When you came in, was there one thing you kind of wanted to do right away, and were you able to do it?
I think what I wanted to do was set a standard where we were getting stuff done. So we immediately initiated a station brightening campaign, which I think in many cases has made a difference.
What does that mean, station brightening?
Station brightening, cleaning stations, painting them, making sure they're in better condition, cleaner. And we've been able to do that in a number of stations, and we also now have kind of the next stage of that. We have a station improvement campaign, which we're doing on an accelerated basis this fall. So if you've been on the Red Line level of Park Street, you've seen it. Downtown Crossing, you've seen it, and there'll be more work going on throughout the fall.
All right, so I just outlined a set of real challenges that happened this year, especially kind of on the tracks. Can you give us an update on how you're tackling the various problems?
Sure. I know obviously our customers wanted it to happen faster on the Red Line. The Red Line derailment, particularly where it happened, was devastating, and how it happened. This morning I was out taking a look at the new signals that we have set up, and we have set them up far away from the track that were destroyed. Tremendous amount of work to get that back. So the Red Line is now back on fully automatic operation.
Why couldn't it happen as fast as riders wanted it to? Why didn't it happen as fast as riders wanted it to?
Because we are in the situation of taking what is very antiquated signal technology that had been seriously impacted literally by a train, and then pulling those materials out, testing them, kind of putting them, what we could salvage from that, putting them back together to run a working signal system. Meanwhile, we have a project in flight, which will unfold over the next 2 years to completely update the signals on the Red Line. We just couldn't. That would have taken much, much longer to do.
All right. The lines are filling up fast, so I'm going to turn to them. 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Billy, you are on the line from Revere. Go ahead.
Hi. So I just wanted to ask about the challenge of working with such an old system like the T. I believe in one of the stations they actually have like a little information about how it's, I believe, the oldest running subway system in America. And I almost kind of wonder, would it, in your mind, as you try to work and make these improvements, would it almost feel easier to, if you could just have like a blank slate, and instead of trying to fix something that is kind of older, and instead it was like, oh man, I wish we could just get the newest stuff in there right away. So I'd just love to hear a little bit more about that.
Thanks, Billy. So would you snap your fingers if you could, Steve?
If we could do that, we surely would. We are in the for instance, on the Red and Orange Line, we have a commitment. We're going to buy 404 cars. We're going to replace every car on the Red and Orange Line over the next 3 years. But it's not the type of thing where you can go to the lot and just buy them and put them in service. It's a process to produce them. It's a process to get them in shape to be running on a regular basis. So unfortunately, we can't snap our fingers. However, yes, you know, we acknowledge that some of this infrastructure is quite old. In fact, on the Mattapan high-speed line, we're running cars that have been reconstructed multiple times, but they're cars that were originally purchased in 1946 and 1956.
So I can imagine a listener listening to this and saying, okay, but I really want to understand how much of this is because somebody hasn't done something right, how much of this is because somebody didn't do something they should have done, and how much of this is because the stuff is just old. What is the truth about that mix?
You know, I think it's a little bit of each. You know, we are in right now in our planning, we are trying not to replicate the sins of the past. That we are in the process, as I think as most folks know, of replacing the red and orange line cars. We have initiated the process of replacing all the cars on the green line with cars that will effectively double the capacity of that line. We have just initiated an additional procurement for commuter rail coaches. Rather than doing everything one by one in sequence, we are trying to get these things done. If I could wave a magic wand and go back 5, 10, 20 years and have initiated these procurements earlier,
Like that would have made a difference.
I surely would have.
And do you think, and then I'm going to go to more calls because the lines are full, are you moving as fast as you could and should on these repairs?
Yeah, I mean, I think we're moving fast as feasible for this system.
Okay. So let's take a couple more calls. 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. David from Hyde Park, you are on the line.
Yes, good afternoon. I'm a frequent participant in the meetings that you have for the disability community, and I also attend Judge King's updates on disability issues. You've been installing new elevators lately, which is great, but none of them are consistent. Some of them from station to station are labeled inappropriately. One will say mezzanine, another will call the same level the lobby. And also, these new elevators are not outfitted with a backlit keyboard so that someone with a vision impairment can actually read the numbers themselves without asking for help.
Let's let Steve address those concerns, David. Thanks for calling. Go ahead, Steve.
David, thank you for the call and thank you for your participation. He referred to Judge King, who is overseeing a consent decree that the T has participated in with the Boston Center for Independent Living to make sure that the T meets standards around accessibility. I will look into the question of the elevator labeling, because now that he mentions it, that does ring a bell. I frequently take the elevators just to make sure that they're in not only good working order, but that they're clean. So I appreciate that. I'll look into that. I think one of the things where we've particularly concentrated is fixing the elevators on the system. If you're on the northern end of the red line, you surely feel this pain. For reasons not fully clear to me, we're fixing both the Harvard and Central Square elevators at the same time. We have accelerated that time frame. We know that's a burden for our customers.
Because they're right next to each other.
They're right next to each
other.
For those
who don't ride the red line.
So if you have an accessibility need, you have to take a shuttle to either Kendall or Porter to get an accessible elevator. And that's a burden for our customers.
All right, let's take another call. Bob from Arlington, go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon. How
Hi,
are
Bob.
You? Steve, thank you for taking this call. I'm from Arlington. I take the bus a lot, mostly just local. And sometimes I know I'm not going to take it in the next month enough to fill my, buy the monthly pass. But more times than not, when I get onto the bus and I just want to add $10 or something to my card, more times than not, and when I say more times than not, more like 70% of the time, the fare boxes are broken, not taking cash. And the driver just waves me. I says, no, not working today, not taking cash. And then I sit down, and I see more and more people just trying to do the same thing. Students on the 77 that I travel trying to put cash in. And this has been going on for years. And person, how much money is going out the window for a simple fare box that can be replaced or repaired? The drivers have told me they get back to the barn and they tell somebody about it, and one particular driver that I have quite often.
All right, so Bob, let me turn to Steve now, give him a chance to answer that question, especially because to build on that, the T did report in 2016 that you were losing about $42 million annually in kind of fare evasion, lost fares, et cetera. So what about Bob's call?
Well, I appreciate Bob bringing this to my attention. We'll look into that 70 series of buses. I would say we had, with our automatic fare collection team, we had a dip in staffing, and we've turned around, and we are restaffing that division so that we can have technicians who can work on problems like he mentioned. I think the T has a couple different issues related to fare collection. Some of it is flat-out fare evasion, and then I think particularly acute on the commuter rail is fare non-collection, which in some cases the cars are filled to such a capacity that our conductors don't have the opportunity to collect all the fares. So one of the things that we'll be doing in 2020 is installing fare gates at Back Bay, South Station, and North Station that will collect fares from people.
Let's talk about money, right? Fares are one source of revenue for the T. You have what's called an accelerated capital investment program. First, can you just explain that phrase for the average listener?
Sure. We have a safety investment and capital acceleration plan that's going to accelerate a number of projects this fall. And, pending a good outcome on that, we will also develop – we are also in the process of developing a plan for 2020. That's really a reaction to – I think folks sort of figured out over the summer that the T needs to do more, and it needs to do it more quickly. So we are trying to take some of our existing projects and get them done in a much shorter time frame.
Okay. You have an $8 billion plan, if that's the right word. Is it enough? This is going to sound like a crazy question, but is it hard to spend that much money and spend it well? Is it enough? And if you need more money, where do you get it?
It is enough. I think it is enough over the five-year period. We have laid out, because this was based on kind of an original charge from the Fiscal and Management Control Board to address the MBTA's capital needs over the next 15 years, we're going to have to get our reliability and modernization spending up to $1.5 billion a year and keep it at that level until 2032.
And do you have access to that $1.5 billion a year to spend it as you get up?
Right now, we have a five-year – we look out over a five-year window – and we have a fully funded capital plan. In fact, we have sources of capital in excess of what we have in the plan. And if we can do more than is in the plan, we will surely do it. It is a question of how much can you do at once on a system that folks want to have functioning on a regular basis. Right now, we're doing weekend diversions in a lot of places so that we can get more work done. Next year, depending on how the fall goes, we may take a look at weekday diversions on a very limited basis.
You know, that's going to freak people out.
Yes, it is. It is an exceptional burden. I note that this studio is right outside the Commonwealth Avenue Bridge project, which for two summers essentially shut down Comm Ave and a small portion of the Pike as well.
Yes.
So these are very disruptive, and we acknowledge that. So there is a limit to how much the MBTA can do, given the need for mobility in the region.
So let's take another call. Karen from Brookline is on the line. Go ahead, Karen.
Yes, I heard a story on NPR yesterday about disparities in public transportation where communities of color are more likely to be served by buses than trains. There's a shortage of buses, and that when the T breaks down, they send the buses from those communities over to the T. So people have trouble getting to work, trouble getting to doctor's appointments. I was wondering how you propose to address that problem.
So thank you for that. Karen, that segment was here on Radio Boston, and one of our guests, Mella Bush Miles, was talking about deferral of buses if the trains were broken down from some of the bus stations that she uses. So let me let you address Karen's question.
Yes, and thank you for the question. And Mella is a participant in our meetings of the Fiscal Management Control Board as well, and a valued voice. Let me unpack a couple different things here. We have the demographics of our bus service is in comparison to the rest of the system has a higher proportion of people of color. Our buses are the places where we've seen service degrade the most, in that they are in the same congestion that an automobile is, whereas something on a fixed track is not.
And so you're saying congestion in general has gotten worse, therefore congestion for the buses has gotten worse.
One of our techniques to deal with this is, you know, we're taking a look at dedicated bus lanes, and wherever we can get lanes that make sense and where communities are willing to give them to us, we'll take them because we really think this is important for improving service for our bus customers.
Do you think that bus lanes, dedicated bus lanes can keep up with the rates of congestion as they change in car traffic enough to solve the problem long term?
I don't think they're the only solution. We have added 45 new buses. 45 new buses to off-peak service. However, the MBTA right now is constrained both by the number of buses and our bus maintenance facilities. We can't absorb any more buses.
Have you seen the Livable Streets report that's come out? That was the segment we did yesterday on Radio Boston. Folks from Livable Streets came in talking about adding 200 buses, suggestions for places to park those buses. Have you seen that report? Do you have any reactions to that?
I have not seen the portion of it where it talks about places to put those buses, but we are, you know, that it's a very welcome addition to the conversation. There are very few communities that are clamoring to have large
parking lots,
large bus maintenance facilities where buses may be running, you know, at all hours. But it is going to be a necessary component if we are going to improve service. And I think they're all pieces of a puzzle. The bus lanes alone will not solve everything, but they are an important piece of the puzzle.
So, Steve, as I listen to you, it's clear that you are deeply aware of the maintenance needs that this current infrastructure has. So I have a two-part question for you. The first part is, is there ever a point where you get to stop playing catch-up on the current infrastructure and moving into new kinds of investments that take our transportation system the place you'd like to take them? And do you have a sense of what that vision is for 10 or 20 years out so that we're not – you mentioned you wish we'd done some things 10 or 20 years ago. Do you have a sense of what that vision is 10 or 20 years from now so that a general manager then isn't saying, ugh, I'm playing catch up on maintenance on the current infrastructure?
I think first, you know, we've talked a lot in the past about state of good repair, and I think people maybe have gotten the notion that we're just kind of replacing one old thing with kind of a modern version of the old thing. A lot of the investments we're making will provide that higher level of service. When we get done with the red and orange line, we will have added significant new capacity.
In terms of numbers of trains or new rails? When you say significantly new capacity, what does that mean?
Sure. We'll be able to run more trains.
Okay.
We'll be able to run more trains. We'll be able to run them closer together, and they will accelerate and slow down faster so that the service will be significantly faster and improved for people.
Okay.
So that's sort of the red and orange line story. You know, we are working on buses. Obviously, we want to improve the service of buses. There's a variety of strategies. I think also over the horizon, there is some version of electrification. The MBTA has bought its last diesel-only bus. We are now buying diesel-electric hybrids. We are experimenting with battery electric buses. It's not kind of not clear for us. The technology needs to declare itself for us to have 1,000 buses that run up and down hills in the snow using electric power. On the commuter rail, we have a commuter rail vision process that we hope culminates by the end of this year that's laid out a bunch of different scenarios. We're going to have conversations with our stakeholders, with our board, to figure out what does the future of commuter rail look like.
1-800-423-8255 is the number if you'd like to call and join our conversation with Steve Puftak, the general manager of the MBTA. Betsy, you are on from Brighton. Go ahead.
Hi, Steve. Thank you for caring about our city. I'm curious if you ever have any plans to expand and make a circle line around the city so that you don't have to take the T in from Brighton to go out, say, to get to JP, like a circle line like in London.
That is a project that has been, you know, sort of there's been planners who have looked at that, building an urban ring. I think right now that is prohibitively expensive to do. I think we are looking at some of our circumferential bus routes, like this, for instance, the 66. Are there ways that we could make that bus route, which if you take it end to end takes a really long time, particularly during rush hour? Are there ways that you could make that route faster and more effective for people? So, I think a heavier light rail version of that, I think, is not envisioned However, you know, there may be certain alternatives that could be effective for some riders.
Steve, I've known you for a long time, and I know there are a number of policy issues you've engaged with over the years. Boston is a gentrifying city that has a difficult racial history with segregation that still exists. And we all know that our public transportation lines reflect that. How do you think about managing the day-to-day of making this system run and moving Boston towards equity, especially racial and economic equity? And what is the T's role in doing that?
I think the T can play an important role in that. And one of the, you know, I sort of meant to answer in one of your previous questions and it didn't come up. I mean, we are taking a look at the Fairmont line of how that could play a role just right now we want to build more ridership on that line. There is a pilot program proposed by the City of Boston, which would add additional service to that line. It is part of this broader commuter rail vision process where there is the potential with some of the scenarios we're looking at where you could get something that was more like rapid transit service on that line, priced like a rapid transit service. So those are, you know, that's one area where we're looking. I think the improvement of bus service is a crucial factor in making, you know, the T does 1.2 million trips a day. A third of those are bus riders. So bus riders are a really important constituency, and improving that service is, you know, is something that the T is, you know, from our strategic plan on down, that's one of the things we prioritized.
You've talked a lot in interviews. I was just watching one you gave earlier today and getting ready for this about recognizing the need for and your desire to reestablish confidence, to reestablish trust, for riders to feel like you hear and understand the experience and the anxieties and the frustrations that they're having. How do you want to do that? What's that going to take?
You know, I think it's going to take a top-to-bottom effort. I think it's almost like a cultural reboot for the T, because it's not only reestablishing trust with the riders, it's reestablishing trust with the workforce. You know, we've been out, myself and senior management have been out visiting facilities, talking to people, and getting their advice. They're really smart about what this system needs. They want to provide great service to customers. We have to give them the tools to do so. You know, I think part of reestablishing trust with customers is communicating with them more effectively than the T has done with the past, and it's also raising the reliability level of our service.
Okay, so we have about a minute left. What is the single biggest either rate-limiting factor or factor to put in place to allow our public transit system to become globally best in class?
I think it is the, you know, the gate, one of the big gating functions is just our ability to roll out capital projects and to get the things we need to execute on those capital projects. If we could get all 404 red and orange line cars on property today, I would do it. It is not feasible to do it. We just initiated a procurement for 80 new commuter rail coaches. The coaches will start coming on property starting in 2 years, which sounds like an eternity to folks, but it is blazing fast in terms of vehicle procurement time.
It does sound like an eternity.
I wish we could do it faster.
Okay. And last word to listeners. You got a lot of T-Riders out there right now listening to you. What's your last word?
We appreciate your patronage. We are working hard every day to build a better T and provide the level of service that you and our workforce deserve.
All right. That is MBTA General Manager Steve Poftak. Thanks for joining us on Radio Boston.
Thank you.
I'm sorry. I was supposed to ask you and I forgot it for a second. You'll come back, right?
Absolutely.
All right. Stay with us. Coming up, we'll have a conversation about the president refusing to cooperate with an impeachment inquiry. Where does that leave Congress and the Constitution? Lots to talk about. I'm Tiziana Deering. This is Radio Boston.